Yeah, so today we're looking at the refrain then. Yeah, and this is like the how am I applying mindfulness? How am I relating to life, to the world, to the experience? In what way? What's my perspective? You could say, what's my take on it? So the refrain is like, it's this golden thread, yeah, that's repeated after every instruction. Be mindful of the breath in this way, from this perspective. Be mindful of posture with this perspective. Be mindful of activities with this perspective, and so on and so on and so on. Yeah. And just jumping to the bottom, abiding, contemplating. Yeah. She abides contemplating the body internally and externally. She abides contemplating arising and passing. She abides contemplating the body barely knowing, continuative mindfulness. So this abiding, contemplating, we had yesterday in the definition. Yeah, it's like this repeatedly turning to. Yeah. Repeatedly staying with, and we've got it again here. So it's a reminder, this is your perspective. This is the view. If you want to become liberated, if you're out for enlightenment, this is the kind of view you need to take. And these are essential aspects of the practice. And what we'll see here is there's a shift from specific characteristics, oh, what's going on in my experience, what's happening to me, how am I dealing with it, from the specific characteristics or content of your experience to more general and universal characteristics. And this is really vital. Yeah. How can we develop compassion for others if we don't move this shift away from just me and mine? So this is where this comes in. These are characteristics, universal aspects that are common to all of life that we're looking at here. It's not just about me and mine. So what the refrain brings in, refrain is just this little verse, yeah, that keeps reminding us of right view, yeah, right view here, right understanding. This is how to look at it. And this is where the insight element of Satipatthana becomes very explicit. So right view, meaning, as we'll see, we're becoming more aware of conditionality. Yeah? We're applying, it's sometimes described as you're putting, you're looking through the lens of impermanence. You're looking through the lens of unsatisfactoriness. You're looking at experience in life through the lens of anatta, no self. So these are the four aspects that are applied to body, to feelings, to mind, to dhammas. In other words, to all areas of experience. So internally, externally, both internally and externally. That's the first way of looking. And this means self and others. Yeah. In Living with Awareness, Bhante talks about this is where the altruistic dimension comes in. Yeah. It's spatial. So now I'm extending the scope. I'm not just focusing on myself. Yeah. I'm aware of others. I'm taking others in. You're going beyond self here. And this is a necessary balance in the practice. It's not just about me and my experience and my development and what I need to grow. Mm. So how do we do this then, being mindful of other people's body, say? Yeah. Often we're mindful of bodily actions of others with a tendency to then analyze, criticize, judge, become envious. We kind of look at them and, oh, I like what she's wearing. Oh, doesn't she move about in a particular way? Or look how she's sitting. Or isn't she loud? Yeah. So this is often how we relate to others. Yeah. To them, and we see them because they're a body, because they're there. Yeah. And they move. They have expressions. They make gestures. They have a particular posture, demeanor, and often we're caught up with others through this judging or being annoyed about them. Yeah. And what the practice is encouraging us to do here is simply rest in the awareness of what is happening. Yeah. For example, in the shrine room, yeah, people cough, people sneeze, people make noises. Sometimes people breathe really loud next to you. And you can get into a real tizz about this kind of thing. Yeah? And it just explodes. Yeah? And it's all about her, because she's getting in the way of my meditation. And the invitation here is to be aware of breathing. Ah, oh, loud breathing. So we're focusing on the bodily, on the activity. Yeah? Rustling. Shuffling. So be aware of what is actually happening. And it's less about our judgmental views or attachment or aversion to that person. So it's my friend shuffling, that's okay. I know her, and that's what she needs to do now and again. But it's that person over there who I'm not quite so happy with, and when she shuffles about. Yeah. So that's how we can work with it. And when we're aware of others bodily, yeah, we're sharing a space here. We're living together. You're sharing a room with someone. We're in the shrine room together. It's necessary to be aware of what's around us, yeah, the other bodies. When we're in the dining room, so there are peak times when we really need to negotiate how we move around one another. So this is mindfulness of body, internally and externally, totally necessary for everyday life. We can't just go through life as if it's only about me, you know. And we can't, although we're slowing down, we can't be so slow. We're really enjoying the shower and just experiencing all the sensations and taking our time. And there are, you know, three people outside waiting. It's not appropriate. Yeah? So it's bringing this appropriate awareness of self and other, internal, external. Yeah? And that our actions have an effect. And our practice has an effect. Yeah? What we practice is what we have to give to others. Yeah? This is the bodhisattva spirit in the practice. Yeah? Others are meaningful. Others are part of my life. and let my practice be how I relate to them. Let that be the basis of my relation to them. Yeah. Let that be what I can give to them. And both internally and externally is not just a repetition here. This is contemplating experience without it being part of my experience or another's experience, but it's just like as an objective phenomena in itself. Not particular to me, not particular to others, same internal, external, universal aspects. So we're going beyond a division here, within and without, and seeing this is the human condition, this is life happening. Yeah? There is coughing, there is discomfort, yeah? There is pain, there is joy, there is laughing. Yeah? So we're meeting it in a way that's sort of more objective, less attached, with less attachment and less aversion. The next instruction for how we look at phenomena, our bodies, feelings, mind and dhammas, is to pay attention to the arising and passing, to both arising and passing. You know, and this of course is seeing things, being aware of the impermanence, yeah. The truth of impermanence. And in the Pali Canon, there's a lot more said about impermanence. Yeah, this is what the Buddha chose to talk about impermanence in a way as a door to then opening up to dukkha and anatta, which impermanence will take us towards. So directly seeing, experiencing the impermanence of something helps us to recognize it's unreliable. It cannot give me lasting satisfaction and ultimate fulfillment. And therefore it cannot be truly considered as mine. So the three lakshanas are connected here. And it's helping us to see that everything, yeah, my feelings, my bodily sensations arise in dependence on conditions. And as these conditions change, so do these experiences, arising and passing. And what it's also pointing us to, and it's a real help I find, that we're aware things are changing, arising and passing dependent on conditions, so that means they're not fixed. Yeah? It's more like we're seeing that things are a process. Like the breath is not a thing. It's not a fixed thing. Each breath is different. And you might want to bring that in the next time you do mindfulness of breathing. Yeah, where's the breath? Where is the breath? Yeah, and what you're actually experiencing, well, what is it? Yeah. We can move in more to life as a process, as a flow, in flux. Looking beneath the surface of things. This is what Satipatthana helps us to do. We don't just take things on face value. Oh, it's this. She is that. Yeah. We're looking beyond. We're looking beneath the surface. Okay, and both arising and passing is that it's more enabling us to see that life is a flow. It's this continuous flow going on, going on, going on. Bare knowing and continuity of mindfulness. So we're doing this just for the sake of being mindful. This is what this instruction is saying. So maintaining mindfulness, continuity of mindfulness. Mindful there is a body, mindful there is pain, mindful there is joy, mindful I'm breathing, mindful I'm confused, mindful I'm tired. It's just this continuity, and it's like you touch your experience moment by moment. You touch it, and you just stay present for whatever's going on. And we are mindful without getting lost in associations and reactions. This is the prapancha. So you're just mindful of what's there. Tired. I should have gone to bed early. I shouldn't have had that cup of tea before I went to bed. Maybe I should change my room. And I really didn't sleep well. You're not in touch with your tiredness anymore. You're in touch with the story about it. And we're familiar with this. So the mindfulness is reminding us to just observe objectively. Just be mindful of what's there. A direct knowing of what's happening. A direct experience of what's happening. And as we go through the retreat, and we include more and more of these fields of experience in our practice, hopefully what we'll be building up is seamless practice. So whether you're on your cushion, whether you're out walking, whether you're cooking, whether you're reflecting, whether you're eating, the practice of mindfulness is become seamless. And then the fourth perspective is abiding independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And this refers to the mind not being attached to any experience, either through craving or through our views or through aversion. It's interesting that if we feel aversion to something, there's a kind of attachment there. We get something out of it, of really having a good go at it, and really getting angry about it. I can feel the energy coming up now. You get something. There's some kind of gratification. And there's like an attachment in that. So this is the bottom line of the practice, not clinging, and it's relevant all the time, all the time. Free of expectations, of speculation, of assumptions that have no ground in direct experience. It's all of that, the speculating, the expecting, the assuming, the interpreting, that makes us dependent. We are not independent then. We're dependent on these things for the gratification they give me, my sense of me then. So what you can always ask yourself is this practice, is this activity, is this attitude helping me to not cling? And that is how we're going to be able to go beyond I, me, and mine. So that's the refrain. No, this refrain.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I know, but this is not to refrain. It's not the verb. It's like a
chorus.
It's the chorus.
It's a musical.
Yeah. Yeah, let's call it the chorus. Refrain. Huh? Was it refrain? Okay. Mm. And this is, if you like, this is the Buddha's teaching on mindfulness, where he's pointing us to what is necessary for liberation. And it brings in quite a different dimension to, let's say, secular mindfulness, which is about more about well-being, yeah? Which is wonderful, and it really has its value. Yeah? But the Buddha is pointing us to something else through the practice of mindfulness. So all of this, you know, I'm aware it's quite a lot that I'm presenting here. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, here's the pithy.
Some more. Here,
not some more, it's the pith.
Oh.
Ooh, wait a minute. I've got a little pocket here somewhere. Okay, so this is this is the pith teaching, yeah? If all of that's too much for you, this is what you come back to. Yeah. This is from Anālayo, yeah? So after he did his PhD on Satipatthana, yeah, this is what he came up with. But I mean, it's not that it's reduced to that. You know, he's refining it all the time, but this is really, really helpful. So, keep is the first thing we do. Keep. Calmly. Knowing. Change. That's it.
That's it.
Casey. We had one Satipatthana retreat in Germany, and someone printed T-shirts with Casey on. So if you don't remember anything else from this retreat, yeah, take this with you. Casey, keep calmly knowing change. And everything I said yesterday, everything I said this morning is really contained in here. You know, this is the courageous heart that keeps going. You stay on track. This is like the interest, the energy, your commitment to your practice, and the calmness, a steadiness of mind, a stability of mind, relaxing, being at ease, the knowing, the alertness of mind. We really need to know what we're doing, where we're going, what's needed, and change, aware of change. It speaks for itself, really, doesn't it? Yeah, calmly, it's like this ease and calm of heart and mind. So we need to keep an eye out. Is that my experience? Am I experiencing more moments of that? Is there ease of heart? Is there peace of mind? Is my practice taking me in that direction? The knowing, am I understanding more? You know, am I seeing more? Is it becoming more part of my being, the Dharma? It's not just an intellectual thing. So let's just pause there. That's kind of the, that's the map of the territory. And we're going to start visiting some places in this territory in the next, over the next few days, visiting our body more fully, visiting feelings, the feeling tone of our experience, having a close look at the mind, and then applying the Dharma. But this is the kind of, this is the general territory that we want to be covering. Anything here at the moment?
Just bare knowing, I think we looked at the direct knowing. It is just that experience without any sort of embroidery.
Yes, exactly. Without the prapancha, without all the associations that actually then you most often take us away from the experience. It's bare knowing. Mm. Let's just have a couple of minutes breather. And just lean back, take a breath. Let it all percolate through and settle somewhere. I'm going to talk a little bit about the body contemplations. There are these six body contemplations in the sutta. We're going to be practicing three of them. We're not going to be practicing anatomical parts, elements, or corpse contemplation. Although I'm going to say a little bit about them because they are very interesting and really important practices. We'll be practicing breathing, awareness of breathing, postures, and bodily activities. So let me just start with the Buddha. And, well, it's actually, it's not the Buddha, it's Ananda. We're all familiar with Ananda, no? Ananda was A-N-A-N-D-A, Ananda. He was the Buddha's friend and companion, seems of similar age, and Ananda had this incredible memory, and he memorized everything the Buddha said. And
It's just never having heard it said.
Okay, So when the Buddha died, Ananda was devastated at the Buddha's death. And he went away and he just couldn't bear it. And he was leaning against this doorpost and someone came to him and said, "Oh, Ananda," trying to console him, and he who was so kind has died. So he was really, really upset. And what did Ananda then do? His best friend had died. So what did he do? He turned now to mindfulness of the body as his best friend. And there's a little verse in the Therigata where it says, "For one whose comrade has passed away, for one whose master is dead and gone, there is no friend like mindfulness concerning the body." So pretty helpful, I'd say. Pretty important, mindfulness of the body. And the implications of this utterance of Ananda, friendship, he's talking about friendship, the warmth of friendship, So I'd like to ask you to reflect on, can you befriend your body? Yeah. Just take that with you. What's your relationship to your body? Yeah. Is it possible for you to be a friend to your own body? Something you can relax with and into. Yeah. And in a way, this is what one of the first instructions we have implies. Be in the body feeling it, not watching it. Yeah. Be in the body feeling it. Yeah. You want to be with a friend, don't you? So can you be with this body? Yeah. And maybe that's going to take some time, but that's the direction we're going in. The body is always with us. It's where life takes place. There's a very short sutta by the Buddhas, I think it's like two sentences, called The All. Yeah, and he just said, well, what is there? There is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, sensing, touch, and cognizing. This is the all. Yeah. And it's like a carousel of experience that's going on. And it's like the structure of this carousel is the body. It's contained in there. And the body is a great source of joy and a great source of suffering. Yeah. It's what we've got. And we take care of our body, not because it's holy, yeah, but because it's what we've got. It's the one we've got for this life. For most people, awareness of body is a good foundation. It's relatively easy for most people to come back to the body, yeah? To take a deep breath. We can all do that, yeah? The breathing happens in the body, and that kind of, it brings you home. We had this lovely poem this morning, yeah? Inch by inch, coming home. Maybe it's like this breath is bringing you home to your body, to yourself. It might be just feeling the touch of the chair in your back, your bum on the seat. It's nothing to think about. It's something to feel, to experience directly. Yeah. And when we're lost in thought, just feel your feet on the ground. Feel your hands wherever they are now. It is really simple. Tiny bit of pressure, yeah, can help you come into that place in your body. Yeah. And we can include here, although in the sutta it's in another part, but it's more helpful to include the senses here. Yeah. If you're lost, yeah, if you're caught up in some kind of emotional tangle or thought tangle, you can just look into the sky, see the space, see the vastness, see the clouds, yeah? Listen to the birds. Close your eyes and just listen to the birds. And learning to be mindful of the body means quite literally with being with and in your body during its activities, instead of carried away by thoughts about, perceptions about. Yeah. And this helps us to be mentally anchored. So this is where the body is a good friend. It's helping our mind become grounded, centered, stabilized. And there are some wonderful similes in the Pali Canon where this is, the Buddha communicates this. I'm just going to mention two. One is the simile of the six animals who are tied to a pole. Yeah? six different animals. There's a monkey, there's a bird, there's a snake, I don't know, a dog, whatever. Yeah, and they're all doing what they do, jumping. They're tied to this pole, yeah, and they're trying to fly, they're trying to crawl, they're trying to run, they're trying to do what they do, yeah, and they just can't get away because they're tied to the pole. So what happens? They keep on and on and on and on. They get tired, yeah, and they lie down. Mm-hmm. And this is a simile that's used for the centering, grounding effect of mindfulness of the body. Yeah, all the distractions, all the things we need to do and think about, and that, bombarding us. You come into your body, and it's like, oh, okay, centering, grounding. So the mindfulness of the body is like this post in regard to whatever distractions arise, taking me away from what I've decided to do. Yeah, I want to be with this person now. Yeah, but I'm thinking about all kinds of other things. Yeah, that's a distraction. It's taking me away from my chosen activity. Mm-hmm. So dropping into the body, you come back. The other one, is the simile of, there's this gathering in a village, very lively, and there's a beautiful young woman dancing on a stage at the front. Yeah, imagine an Indian village and everybody's excited and fantastic, and we want to go and see and we want to watch, and there's a lot of hustle and bustle. And there's a man. His task is to walk towards this beautiful dancer through the crowd. He's carrying a bowl of oil on his head, yeah, filled to the rim. And behind him is a man with a sword. Mm-hmm. And should he spill one drop of oil, yeah, he'll chop off his head. Yeah. I mean, the Buddha was a bit drastic in his... very graphic, yeah. But this is actually quite, it really puts across the message. In order to preserve his life, this man carrying the bowl of oil, he's got to have a kind of 360 degree awareness. Yeah, it can't just be me and my bowl of oil. Yeah, he's got to be aware of the crowd. He's got to be the other bodies around him, the noise, the attraction of the woman. And imagine if he got caught up in that, bowl would fall right off his head. So it's this, you know, it's not a closing down mindfulness that we're talking about. It's not a mindfulness that is detaching or cutting us off from the rest of life. Yeah. And there are many more. They're all helping us to know the quality of awareness of the body, this calming, strengthening, grounding, yeah, of the mind. So it's this mind-body relationship. Through the body, we're strengthening the mind. We're calming the mind. Okay, so the first one is the breathing, yeah, which we're all very familiar with. Yeah. And mindfulness of breathing is a tool for the development, can be a tool for the development of insight. Yeah, the impermanent nature of the breath. Yeah, breath not as a thing, the arising and passing. You've never breathed this breath before, and you never will again. Yeah? It's one breath closer to death, we could say. Yeah. Tuning into the process. Mm. I want to say a little bit about the other two categories. We'll be doing more of the mindfulness of breathing. But outside of formal meditation, mindfulness of bodily activities. And it's important to clock, to know, it's almost impossible to just be mindful. Yeah, I mean, how often have we said, I'm just going to be mindful, that's my new aspiration, that's my intention, I'm just going to be mindful. Yeah, and after, I don't know how long, you kind of lose it, or it doesn't happen, or something else has gotten in the way, or you've just simply forgotten. Yeah, this is, Bhante talks a lot about this in Living with Awareness. Yeah? The practice is easy, the practice is simple, but it's not easy because we forget to be mindful. Yeah. So there's this connotation of remembering is part of mindfulness. So we are mindful of something. And for the purposes of practice, this is really helpful. Yeah? What are you mindful of? So we're going to practice outside of meditation, being mindful of bodily movements, mindful of bodily activities. Yeah? In the sutta, it's the monk putting on his robe and taking it off and picking up his bowl. Yeah. So we need to translate that into our lives. What are our daily activities? Yeah. Cleaning our teeth, getting dressed, yeah. Making a cup of tea, yeah. going for a walk. Yeah. We're active most of the time. This is a large part of our lives that we're talking about where we can be mindful. Yeah, eating, drinking, washing, writing, reading. These are all the activities with which we fill our life. Yeah. Talking, being with people. And we can kind of start with the bigger picture and break it then down also to what's entailed in actually making a cup of tea. And I was struck with, in the body scan, Majimala talked about being aware of our arms and hands, that they were still. Yeah? And most of the time they are not still. Yeah, they're moving. We're reaching, stretching, gripping, grasping, clenching, opening, bending. We're doing something all the time with our hands. Yeah, fiddling with the pen, yeah, scratching. All it's going on all the time. Can I be aware of that? You needn't go anywhere to do this. It's just what's happening right here. Yeah, be aware of the movements of your hands and arms, for example. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to suggest that you each choose a daily activity to be mindful of. Something that you do a few times a day, yeah, like making a cup of tea, yeah, like opening the door, like going to the toilet. And what else do you do a few times a day? You clean your teeth twice a day, most people. Yeah. Eating, we'll come back to that one. Mm-hmm. So choose an activity. Yeah. And just stay with that for the next few days. So every time your mindful activity, let's say cleaning your teeth, can you be aware of all of the movements cleaning your teeth? You know, a whole lot needs to happen with these hands and arms before you've even got your toothpaste on your toothbrush. Yeah, haven't even got it in our mouth. Yeah, and then taking it to your mouth. The movements here, the taste in the mouth, all this foam forming in the mouth, depending on your toothpaste, yeah. And just being present for that. That's the practice. Can you be present? Can you be interested? Can you just experience more of this everyday activity? Mm. Yeah, and eating. I mean, eating is a fantastic one. Yeah, it starts when we smell the food. Pleasant. I'm not so sure about unpleasant, yeah. maybe it's cabbage. I don't like cabbage, for example. Yeah. So it's a whole process starts there, a process of noticing, of experiencing. Yeah. and then you get your food on your fork. I mean, all this might sound a bit sort of strange, but it is how we can practice mindfulness in our everyday activities. Yeah. Are you present for your meal? Yeah. Or are you somewhere else in your head? Mm-hmm. Seeing the food, the colour, the shape, mm-hmm. when you put it in your mouth, the texture, the taste. There's so much, there are worlds to discover there. And then how it all changes when it's in your mouth. Yeah. Taste changes. Some things start off sweet and then they turn maybe bland or sour or whatever. Yeah. Just get interested. Mm-hmm. And the final area with activities is when you're working. Yeah. So cooking is fantastic. I mean, Helen's got a great opportunity here. What cooking boils down to is touching and moving. Yeah. Touching and moving. So you're touching the vegetables, you've got this tactile experience, cold, hard, soft, floppy, stiff, whatever kind of vegetable it is. Yeah. And then you're chopping it, you're moving. So you can just be with that. Yeah. And that helps you to be present and not kind of chopping and you're dreaming. Or, or cleaning the toilets. So it's the same principle again and again. Touching and moving, smelling, cleaning agents. This is how we build up continuity of mindfulness. You don't wait till you're in the shrine room. You don't wait till you're given an exercise. You take initiative for the whole of your life and the whole of your practice. This is what it means practicing in all areas of your life. It doesn't happen by itself, unfortunately. Okay. So those are the areas we'll be focusing on. Breathing, activities, and posture. So right now, just be aware, drop into your body, and be aware of your posture. You're leaning forward, leaning against, how are your legs? No need to think, feel into your body, into your posture. Yeah. How upright are you? How bent are you? And we'll be changing posture soon. We'll be standing up and going to get our cup of tea. We'll be walking. You know? And at times we lie down when we do the body scan. It's the same practice, but a different posture. Mm-hmm. And if you remember yesterday, right at the beginning, the Buddha said, all of this is to be practiced, whether sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. Yeah. And there's a nice lying down practice I like to do in the morning. Well, evening and morning. And the morning is your alarm clock rings or you're awake. Yeah? And instead of just then, all right, the plan is you get up, you have a wash or whatever, give yourself three breaths. Yeah? And it's a bit like you're switching on the mindfulness mode then. Yeah? Just three breaths. Yeah? I think it's half a minute if you breathe slowly. Yeah. So it's half a minute longer in bed. And it's a way of coming into presence. Yeah. And when you go to bed at night, this is more the meta side of things. Yeah. Lying in bed and again, coming back to your friend, your body, yeah. And just wishing yourself a really good night's sleep. Yeah. May I sleep peacefully. Yeah. May I sleep well. May I wake up refreshed for the next day of practice and life. And you kind of send yourself off with a metaphor, mindful little good night. Yeah. So before we have a break, I'm going to say that at some other time. I'm going to leave that for the moment. I want to talk about the practice of silence and the meditation reviews. So coming back to the poem this morning, the inch by inch coming home, this is what silence is about. It's about coming home to your experience of yourself, listening to yourself, yeah, allowing your experience to be there. And tonight after supper, we'll have supper in silence, and then we will be in full silence. Yeah. Till near the end of the retreat. So this is another practice, and for some people love it, some people find it quite challenging, and so I'd just like to say a few things about the practice of silence. It is inner and outer silence and stillness. It's not just about not talking, being quiet, yeah. It's more about the inner silence that we're allowing our mind to move into. Yeah. Like reading, be aware if you read, yeah, it occupies the mind, it fills the mind. You're no longer so silent. And it's the same with talking. You might have noticed sometimes you feel quite tired after you've been talking. It takes energy, it takes space, and we're just putting all that aside for a little while and allowing ourselves more inner space and time to see what's there, yeah, to get in touch with what's there, to just allow life to touch you really. So we're shifting gear, yeah, from not doing so much, not going out so much to other people, but more just being. And part of this practice is being aware of what you choose to do in the silence. Now, when we're talking and we're interacting with other people, things can happen more by themselves. It just happens. But now you're making your choices. What to do with this time, with this space. And in silence, we're also relating to other people. We're aware of other people. Think of the man with the bowl of oil on his head when you're moving about. How are you moving about? It doesn't mean we have to start becoming unnatural or sort of artificial or daren't move. It's just like a peripheral awareness. Yeah, I know Claire is sitting here. I don't need to look at her to know that. I've kind of she's on my radar. Yeah, I know Aleph's there. So you move with a sense of what's around you, the other people, the other objects. Yeah, and it can become quite beautiful and quite sort of dignified. Yeah, that practice. And I'm saying this so that we don't cut off from one another. Don't detach. Yeah. Don't go into, I'm doing my practice mode and I don't want to look at other people. Yeah. It's not about that. So we're staying connected in the silence. At the same time, please respect other people's silence. Bear in mind, if you speak to someone, you're breaking their silence as well as your own. Yeah. And be aware too of your own prapancha about other people. You know, we'll be aware of one another, and just what your speculations, your assumptions about them. And don't jump too quickly to conclusions. You know, I look, this is what people tell me, and I know, you know, I can look really serious at times. And people think there's something wrong with me, or I'm really sad, or I'm not feeling good. And most often I'm feeling really good then. Just I can get very still and contained. Yeah. But my face does something. Yeah. So we can be quite quick to jump to conclusions and kind of go out, jump in with the person. Yeah. If you're really concerned, just say, are you okay? Yeah. Do you want a hug? Doesn't have to become a conversation. Mm. So watching out for the ruminating about other people. In silence, that can get really loud. Sometimes it's easier to say something in the kitchen or in the dining room, like 10 seconds of pass me that, than all kinds of gesticulations and miming and whatever. So we're holding a collective space for one another here, with kindness, with consideration. Mm-hmm. And if you can't cope, if you have difficulties, if you need to talk, we are there. That's what the team is there for. You can come to us at any time. Yeah, you don't need to wait for your review. You don't have to worry about whatever. What will they think of me? Just come. Yeah. We're moving. We're on track, but we're moving at a different pace. Each has her pace. Each has her measure. Yeah. So please take that into account with your practice. Mm. And also, silence can be a protection. Mm. I remember on one retreat getting really angry with someone I was washing up with. Because this person was just so slow and was holding up everything, and I was boiling inside. Yeah? And had I not been in silence, I'd have said something to this person. And only later on did I find out this person had a particular handicap. It wasn't visible, and I didn't know about it. And the silence really protected me from harming that person and harming myself. You know, so it's this weight. Think twice. Is it necessary to say this? I find that really helpful. Just, is it necessary? Yeah. And be aware that silence sensitizes us to both painful and joyous experiences. Yeah. So stuff will come up. Yeah. And the practice is, can I be with this? Can I know this? Yeah, let me see it. Let me feel it. What do I need to be with it? If it gets overwhelming, back off. Yeah, go and have a cup of tea. Yeah, go for a walk. Don't put yourself under pressure to be dealing with everything that's coming up. Yeah, is it the right time? Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Be gentle. Be gentle with yourself. And this is where the reviews come in, the meditation reviews. Yeah. Of course it's optional, but I really encourage you to make use of them. Yeah. It helps us stay on track with what's going on for you. Yeah. And it's a place where you can just articulate, maybe make some sense by objectifying your experience. And we're there to just listen. Yeah? We might be able to give you some pointers. You can go away and think about it. We might be able to make some suggestions. Yeah? But it's a space to explore your practice with someone. And the value in that is you get another perspective. Mostly in practice, the perspective we have is our own. And that is deluded. Yeah, and we're always listening to the same voice telling us the same habitual things. And someone coming in with a different perspective in a review is really, really helpful. Yeah. And it doesn't need to be anything spectacular or special experiences that you can come and talk about. You don't need to have questions. Yeah, it's just, what are you doing in your practice? How are you practicing? And what's going on for you? Yeah. And it can be helpful if you prepare, think a little bit beforehand, what would I like to look at more closely? Yeah, choose a couple of things, yeah, that you'd like to look at more closely. So it's about your practice. Mm-hmm. Not coming in telling us everything that you've experienced in the last 24 hours or all your analysis and interpretation of it. It's a practice of speaking from your experience, not about it, yeah, not explaining it to us.